यथा दर्पणाभाव आभासः नो यथा दर्पणाभाव आभासः नो मुखं विद्यते कल्पनाहीनमेकम्
मुखं विद्यते कल्पनाहीनमेकम्
तथा दिव्ययोगे निरभासको यः
तथा दिव्ययोगे निरभासको यः
स नित्योपलब्धिस्वरूपोऽहमात्मा
स नित्योपलब्धिस्वरूपोऽहमात्मा
यथा दर्पण अभावे आभासः न मुखं विद्यते कल्पनाहीनम् एकं यथा दिव्ययोगे निराभासको यः सः नित्य उपलब्धि स्वरूपो स्वरूपः अहम् आत्मा So he says, yatha, just as darpana abhave abhasaha now, just as when there is a removal, a hani, removal or destruction of the abhasa, of the reflection in the absence of the mirror, right? If I just take the mirror away, you know, then the reflection is also gone. The reflection, the absence of the mirror, there is a destruction or an absence or removal, loss of the reflection. So when that is the case, when the reflection is removed in the absence of the mirror, mukham vidyate kalpanahinam ekam, the face, the mukha, the face which is one, this face, this one, the face which is one, vidyate is. The face is still there, right? The face is still there. Kalpana hinam, in the absence of the kalpana. The kalpana is just the projection of the face into the mirror. So in the hinam, in the absence or in the removal of that projected face, the face, this face, the one face that actually is, right, still remains, still exists. Tata, similarly, Divyoga, when there's a separation, vyoga, separation from the buddhi, because they also in the absence of the buddhi, separation from the buddhi. Di is buddhi. Buddhi means your intellect, your antakarana. So divyoga, then nirabhasaka yaha. That one which is free of the reflection, abhasaka is the reflection, nirabhasaka. Is the one who is without the reflection. He says, yaha. He goes like this. I am ayamatma. Goes, ahamatma. I am that atma whose swarupa, whose very nature, is timeless consciousness. Who remains without the reflection, who is there abiding without the reflection in the absence of the buddhi. Right? Just like when a mirror is removed, how the reflection is removed, right? But the face remains, right? Without anything happening to it. Right? So like that, when the buddhi is removed, so that there is no reflection, nothing happens to me. Just like nothing happens to my face. That's the verse. We have all kinds of fears around the what it would mean to lose my body or to be not have this upadhi, this body, mind, sense organs, because there's some feeling inside of like, well, how would I know myself? How would I know I'm here? You know, because I need my buddhi to tell me somehow I'm here, or to reflect my being somehow. You could even think, what if there was no I notion? Like saying, I am. What if there was no one there saying, I am, I exist, I am like this. My nature is Brahman. Do I need my buddhi to be there to say these words? My nature is Brahman, and then in saying those words, then I appreciate myself. Because what if there was no one there to say these words? Or there was no way to hold a mirror, as the Buddha does, a mirror up to my being. Then I would just be without any type of commentary at all. Right? No one talking about me. No one defining me. And so how would I feel? How would I feel in that case? Well, you'd feel just like you feel when you look in a mirror and you're, you know, noticing yourself, and then you put the mirror aside. Okay. Now, how do you feel when we put the mirror aside? Well, I just don't feel anything. I feel exactly like myself as when the mirror was there. The mirror's there, I'm looking at the reflection. I take the mirror away, I'm still there. Now, when I have the mirror there, what is being added? I'm really serious about this, actually. Here's the mirror. I'm looking in the mirror. Now, how is, in what way is that an addition to my being, this mirror that I'm looking into? How is it an addition to me? You know, is there anything added? Is there an addition? Is there anything added? Well, the only thing that is there is the reflection. But is the reflection any type of an addition? Like, do I feel like this reflection, this mirror, is necessary for me to be a whole person? Or for me to be a full person? Or even for me to feel acknowledged as myself? Do you think this reflection is necessary? I don't think so. We're just talking about the mirror now. I don't think so. Do you think that it's necessary for you to be able to say in words, you know, this is a reflection of my face, but I am my real face. I am my face. I mean, that sounds really silly, but but when we translate it into this situation, sometimes we feel like, you know, in reference to myself, that it's important for me, now that I'm gaining self-knowledge, you know, to be as a Jivan Mukta, as somebody who is liberated, that in my saying, I am Brahman, you know, or I am whole, or I am full, or just I am the Satchitananda, I am myself. Do these words add something to me? It's very interesting. It's kind of like this. Here's this couch. So you're having right now an experience of the couch, right? Would it help you if we said right here, couch, couch? Is there something that, you know, that makes it more of a couch in your experience, you know? Also, I am to recognize now. It's a moment as I'm getting clear in my knowledge, just to recognize the changelessness of my being. See, we're just in a contemplative mode, and we're just recognizing the changelessness that I am, my own self experience. Now, is it necessary for the mind to say, to label that Satchitatma? I am the Satchitatma. Now, it isn't necessary for me to say I am the Satchitatma, because I am the Satchitatma. It doesn't require any type of label. It is necessary for my mind, when my mind is learning to differentiate myself, my being, from the buddhi, from the thought modifications and the absorbed mind and all of these, to be able to make that differentiation. I am the buddhi. This is me. This is the buddhi. Right? This is me. This is the thought. This is the ananda, myself, that is stable, where I'm just pointing that out, like the teacher will continually pointing that out to you. I point that out to myself. I am the Satchitatma. We can even say when we meditate, when we do nididhyasana contemplation, we often use a mantra. that says, like Chaitanyoham, I am consciousness, or Shantoham, I am all Shanti, Asangoham, I am not attached from anything. I'm not attached to anything. Asangoham, Asangoham, Asangoham. Why we say this is not as a label to me, but to continually bring the mind which has identified itself totally with my being, you know, back to a viveka, where it is recognizing my nature in contrast to it. See what I mean? This is the mind, this is the thought, these are the words, these are the vrittis that are passing through, but I am the asanga atma, the self who is biting, talking, and we're talking to the mind. We're teaching, the mind is teaching itself, right? I am the asanga atma, the atma that is, the self that is completely unattached to anything. It's a, the mind is recognizing that the very nature of the truth of itself, separating it from the changing vrittis, the changing emotions, the changing perceptions. So that mind, instead of saying, I am the self, say that's its mantra, the mind is saying, I the mind and the Atma, I the mind and the Atma, I the mind and the Atma. That's what it would be saying until it gets knowledge. I am the self, I am the self, I am the self. Then you've always known that. There's no new knowledge there, but that's what it's saying. It's labeling me, I am the self, I am the self, I am the self. Okay. Now what we want the mind to be saying is to recognize that, you know, I am objectified. I am an object of knowledge. The mind, I have a mind of an object of knowledge. Myself is a sangoham. Myself is changeless. It's never attached. So the mind continues to differentiate the mithya vrittis, the mithya thought modifications, from the nature of the self, you know. So now, look at, let's go back to the mirror. What if the mirror has face ignorance? It has self-ignorance, in a sense. The mirror has self-ignorance. And so the mirror, which takes itself, takes the face, the truth, the actual face experience to belong to the mirror. Say I'm holding up a mirror, right? The reflection of the mirror, you know, is the reflection of my face is there in the mirror, right? But the experience of the face is not in the mirror. The actual face and the experience of the face is in the face, not in the mirror. But the mirror has gotten that confused. The mirror feels that the face is in the mirror. That's what it feels. It has no viveka, right? So it thinks, I am the face. And so now the mirror needs to be taught, right? That actually the face, you know, which is reflected in the mirror, right? Is only the abhasa. That's only the reflection. That's not the me, the face itself. Your experience of me-ness has nothing to do with the mirror. You know? So you have to then have a mantra and a teaching that distinguishes your beingness, from the mirror, from the face in the mirror. And so when it's all, both are objectified like that, there's something simple exercise you can do to the poor face in the mirror. Face in the mirror. The exercise is just simply to keep removing the mirror. Mm-hmm. Yeah? You just keep removing the mirror. And when you remove the mirror, every time you remove the mirror, nothing happens to you. The face experience, the person experience, the being experience, you think belongs to the reflection in the mirror, but when you remove the mirror, nothing has happened to you. Nothing. Not even the slightest ripple. You can bring it back, and then there's the face reflection. But again, nothing has happened to you. When you bring it back, when you take it away, when you bring it back and you take it away, there isn't the slightest ripple in your being. And so then you begin to realize that actually This abhasa is simply mitya. It has no being whatsoever. Nothing. It has no experience. That reflection has zero experience. It's a zero contributor. It's totally mitya. It has no being of its own, no essence of its own, nothing. And then I notice also, okay, this mirror, now I have viveka, okay? Now I have some viveka because I have the mirror here in front of my face, and now I am noticing, I am cognizing with some clarity that the meanness of the face is here, you know? It's here. It's not here. I see it. I recognize it. That my being belongs to me, not to the objectified reflection. I'm looking at this reflection, right? And I've gotten confused. But now I see that with the mirror here and without the mirror, nothing happens to me. With the mirror, my meanness is here. Without the mirror, nothing has happened. My meanness, the me, you know, is here. With the mirror, here. Without the mirror, here. What if I distort the mirror? Nothing happens to me. Right? I think I'm distorted because the mirror is distorted. But there is no distortion taking place in me. There's no sensation, nothing. What if I make the mirror so that my head goes like this? Then I would expect to feel my head going like this, you know? But nothing happens. Zero. And so then I start to realize that my being is truly a sangha. It's a very important word, this asanga. It means that there is no attachment. Whatever is happening in the mitya world, in the world, the reflected world, the world of these reflections, doesn't touch me in any way. I am the asanga atma. Means that nothing sticks to me, nothing touches me. And then in terms, when we go back now to myself, we say, this self, in reference to my buddhi, I have a conviction. One thing that we have a little difference in terms of my own situation here, for myself as a conscious being, versus a face in a mirror, right? Because it, with the face and the mirror's over here, the face is here. But now, with my own being and buddhi, there is no distance between my being and the buddhi. Buddhi means, you know, your mind. There is no distance. Like, there's not the atma here and then some space and then the buddhi, right? There's no space like that. But there is difference in that your mind is something that is illumined, that is not illumining you back, right? And yet the mind enjoys you. It enjoys you kind of like the pot enjoys the clay, because your being is the truth of itself. But the mind itself is other than you, in the sense that it's other than you only in the sense that it's mitya. And from its own standpoint, it has no consciousness, you know, no consciousness of its own to come into a relationship with you. And as I was saying the other day, that's why your mind just assumes that it is the face, that it is the self. It absolutely assumes that because there's no time ever when the mind has any distance from the self. But that doesn't mean the mind is the self. It is the self from its own standpoint because it has no being of its own. But from the standpoint of the self, the mind is something that is illumined. It's something that comes into being and goes out of being. It's continually changing, thought after thought after thought after thought. And I'm remaining stable. And that being so, and that's our every experience of every moment, in fact. All of your thoughts are coming and going, your emotions are coming and going, your perceptions are coming and going, all experiences are coming and going, except for you. If you were coming and going, then you once you're gone, you're gone. Then who's coming? You know? There's no coming and going for you. you're the stable one, and yet my mind believes that the stable one, it doesn't even notice the stable one, all it notices is the conscious being, which it itself is enjoying, and it believes that it is that self. That it, that Buddhi itself, is the conscious being. That's what it believes. So, what Hastamalaka is saying in this verse is, you know, it's really not like that. And you've never experienced it like that, you just haven't noticed. In fact, every thought comes and goes as you remain exactly the same. Thought, you can think of the thought, you can think of the thought as the mirror. This, or you can go look at this. This thought mirror is replaced by this thought mirror, is replaced by this thought mirror, is replaced by this thought mirror, is replaced by this thought mirror. What if I just put all the mirrors down? Then what would my experience be? I put the mirrors down. I resolve the buddhi. What would happen to me? It's almost like saying, I could say it exactly like this, the same thing. What if I resolved or put down the whole entire universe? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because my experience of the universe really is through the vrittis. Otherwise, the universe has already been put down. My experience of the universe is only through the thought modifications that I perceive. Otherwise, I don't have an experience of the universe. So, what is the relationship of me to these experiences? What if I don't have the experiences? What would that be like? Would I feel that I've lost something? You know? What would you have lost? When something is understood or labeled as mithya, its presence or absence doesn't contribute in any way to your being. You know, like if we go back to the clay pot, the pot is a non-contributor to the clay. Why? Because the only thing that is there is clay. How can the pot contribute to the clay when the pot is nothing but clay? What is the contribution? Because there's nothing has happened. There's only clay there. And that's what we mean by mithya. That's the significance of mithya. It can be, the pot could be so ornate, it could be so beautiful, you know, but what is it contributing to the clay? Just think from the standpoint of the clay. The only thing the clay experiences is clay. You know? What is the contribution of my buddhi, or the world in that matter, to me? What is its contribution? One example I really like to help understand this, and I talked about it a couple of days ago, I think, is the dream, when you wake up from the dream. Say you have a very kind of vivid, very real dream, you're totally involved in it, you know? And it's so real, it is so real. And all this and that is going on. And all of a sudden you wake up from it. And then that whole thing, that whole world and all of the characters that you were engaged with, including the one you're identified with, that whole world is gone. Just like that, it's gone. And yet, what is your experience? You could say, all of these people have been destroyed. I have lost my life. All of my friends, all of my family, all of us have been wiped out. We've all been killed. But there has been no death. Not even at all. Not even the slightest twinge of death or change. It's non-existent. Nor is there any loss, because what is the truth of the whole entire dream of the space, of, you know, the space, of the sky, of the trees, of the people, of the grasses, of the animals, the whole panorama. What is actually there is just its being, its isness, its and its consciousness, its knownness. That's what is actually there. That is the clay. And so when the mithya dream goes away, nothing has happened. Because what is actually there is changeless. What is actually there as the very being doesn't belong to time and space. It's not objectified. It's not an object in time and space. And so there is no death. There is no change. There is just your being. And then you can say, how boring. Only you is there. But love is not boring. Wholeness, fullness, ananda, is not boring. Like in the world, when you're in love with someone or you're just enamored by your situation, how fast does time go? You're wanting time to slow down, you know? Because you just want to be with that ananda. You would wish that it was just timeless. Those moments when you've had that depth of wholeness or that depth of fullness, you would want, let it just be like this. Please don't go away. Don't go away. Just be. Oh, gosh, how long is this going to last? No, that feeling would never come, you know. Time becomes like a inimical. Time is a something you want. You want the time to go away. Yeah. You don't want you to go away. You want the time to go away. This is totally legitimate because, in fact, your being is timeless. It's not meant to go away. You are meant to just be as you are. And as you are is that complete ananda, that complete all is well with me-ness, that completeness where all of the things that are going on in the mithya world are fine. They're Ishwara. Let them be. Let them go on. Because you've differentiated, you know, the face from the mirror. You've differentiated yourself. And then, while you're still living, this is the wonder of being a Jivan Mukta, being somebody who has self-knowledge while living. So Mukta means liberated, Jivan while living. So you become a Jivan Mukta. The wonderful thing about being a Jivan Mukta is here you still have this body and mind and sense organs, and so you're perceiving all of the world and you're walking through yourself. You're walking through Ishwara. You're living in Ishwara. Your body, mind, sense organs, which themselves are only Ishwara, in truth. Just like in the dream, all the dream characters only belong to the dream. They don't have some separate reality as this dream character thought, that looks like an interesting dream. Why don't I join in? You know? No, your being is part and parcel. It's like in the fabric, the warp and woof of the dream. Everything about your body, your mind, your sense organs, the activity you find yourself in, the theater, the play of it all, you find yourself in that. You know, you're part of that. You're part of Ishwara. And now, before you have knowledge, it's all very, very real, and you don't know that it's Ishwara, and you just think it's some, you know, the physical planet that you've been born into, and you're this little pocket of consciousness, and with a finite body, trying to become whole and complete and happy and trying to make your way and try to make a life for yourself. That's the kind of the nightmare of the jiva, the horrible burden of being an ajnani. Ajnani means one who doesn't have self-knowledge. But if you have self-knowledge, once you know, once that viveka is there, your being has never done anything and never will do anything. It's just the satchit ananda. The wholeness of yourself simply is. You need to do nothing for it. That is your birthright. That's who you are. And then you find, now that you have knowledge, here's this body that has all this prarabdha, you know, the karmas that brought you in into this world. And this is how, whatever you are now and from your birth unto your death, however you fit into this world, is part of Ishwara's play. It's part of, not play, it's part of the play, the story of Bhagawan that's unfolding right now. This is your piece of it. And this piece of Ishwara, the play of Ishwara, you know, will take you from your birth to your death with all of the trappings, all of the situations, all of the people, all of the things that you need in a given situation to take you all the way through until it's time to leave. Your karmas have run out. And so for a jnani, when this clarity is there, this type of clarity, this type of viveka, you sit back. Here you've got this body, mind, sense organs. You sit back, appreciating the play, what Ishwara is doing. In the whole of all of the experience that you're having, because we have knowledge of experiences around the world, we're getting knowledge of what's going on in the solar system, we've seen all of these things, and we're interested. Some of the situations are so difficult. There's some difficult karmas that are taking place. And always when there's difficult, this is all Bhagavan, there's all these difficult, nightmarish karmas, like what's going on in Syria, what's going on with the global warming, what's going on with the animals and the factory farming, there's all these terrible horror stories going on. And at the same time, there's a balance. And these, all these horror stories have rising on the other side the devas. These horror stories are the asuras, the tragedies, they're asuric. But on the other side, there's going to be something rising that's compensatory. You know? And so when you look around at the creation as a jnani, you see how Ishwara, in Ishwara's time, which is very frustrating, Ishwara's time is slow. Okay? And the Pratibhasika, the Ijiva, the individual's time is very fast. You know, Ishwara is so slow. He should, come on, go. Oh, you know? But Bhagavan works in his own time, so you have to slow down. You have to, because it's a huge, huge creation. It's like turning a big ship around. It goes very slowly. You know? But it is moving, you know. And so you need to just relax and appreciate the movement. It's like the symphony, it's like the movement of Bhagavan's creation and what he's asking of you in this creation. What's your part in this play? You don't have to create your part. Your part is here, and you're being asked. This jiva, the body, mind, sense organs, is being like a chess game. You know? It's being placed in situations all of the time to handle this situation and handle this situation and do this and do that. And from our standpoint, as body, mind, sense organs, jnani, walking around in Bhagavan, it's just to be sensitive to the Dharma. What's being asked of me in the situation? That's really it. It is no longer what can I get out of this? Because I don't need to get anything out of it. I need to get something out of it when I'm projecting my ananda, my wholeness, my fullness, onto this object or this object or this object, then I need to get something out of it. Because instead of my mind having my being to rest in and enjoy and feel that being loved, you know, I project, because of my ignorance, I project that love out onto someone or something, you know. And then I have to have that, so that I can feel loved. In fact, that's another beautiful thing that we realize, is this being loved. Everyone wants to be loved. It's not that everybody wants to be loving. You want to be loved. And being loved, you can love. That's the truth of it. I need to be loved. I need to be loved, because that being loved is like being known. It's a completed state. Like if I say, this is known, this is known, this is known, this is known, that is knownness is my swarupa. Being loved is also my nature. It's my nature. But I think, because of the language, if I, in language, I would say, have to say, this is known by him, or this is known by me. I need that by me there, right? But the I am loved. I am loved by him. I am loved by her. We add this by him, by her. I am loved by my cat, you know. Yeah. And as though this love, the reason I am loved is because this person or this animal or this being is loving me. And that's why I feel I am loved. Right? But actually the am lovedness is the ananda. That is ananda. The self is a completed state. It is not a state where something needs to be gained from the outside. So every being wants, you can say every being wants to love. Well, everybody wants to be loved because that's the completed state. But I want to be loved without, in a timeless way, where that's just who I am. I am loved. I'm a loved person and it will never change. Right? That's, I am sat, my being. I am existence itself. It will never change. It's timeless. I'm consciousness itself. That will never change. It's timeless. I am ananda itself. That will never change. It's timeless. And what do I want? I want to exist for one day more. Let me exist. And let me exist as a conscious being. I don't want to be senile or lose my mind or something. Let me exist as a conscious, intelligent, conscious being. And let me be happy. Let me not suffer. That's what I want. And why do I want it? Because my mind is what wants it, because it has ajnanam, and it takes itself to be the existent being, and its existence is temporary and ever-changing, right? It wants itself to be a conscious consciousness, which is ongoing. It doesn't want to lose its consciousness. It doesn't want to lose its knowledge, because what good would that be? To go on existing and then to lose your knowledge or to lose your consciousness, that would be horrid. So I want to go on existing. I want to be alert, to be conscious. And of course, I don't want to be unhappy. I want to be existing, go on existing, go on being a conscious being, and to be whole and complete. Then I will have been successful in my life. And I had thought that getting this and this and this would give me that. And then, but I needed this also. And then I need to get rid of this. And then I was mistaken about this group of things. I have to get rid of this and replace them with these. But as I go on lifetime after lifetime, shuffling all of this around, I continually find out that it does not work. And then I throw my hands up to Bhagavan and I say a prayer. There must be a solution. There must be. Because how could I have this fundamental desire that really all of us have, and there's no solution to it. You know? Who am I really? Who am I really? Please teach me. And then the mind needs to be taught. It needs to be able to differentiate this creation, all of the experiences that I have, all of the things that are going on in my mind need to be differentiated from me, from the face. Yeah. And then I recognize my freedom, because in fact, my being is timeless. I'm not an object in the universe. I'm the very self, the existence that the universe enjoys. I'm not an object in the universe. I am being itself, not an object. And I'm not an object of consciousness, right? I am the bottom line. I am consciousness itself, not an object of consciousness. If I'm an object of consciousness, then who's the consciousness that's objectifying me? I am the conscious being itself. And what about my ananda? Well, every time you experience ananda in the world, the ananda that you're experiencing is not located in the object. You fall in love with the object, or you fall in love with the person. That person is such a source of happiness for me. But you are not there looking at that source of happiness. You're looking at what you think is the source of happiness, but you're not looking at the happiness. I love that person. Look at that happiness they have. They're just shining with happiness. Isn't that beautiful? And you're so happy to be with that person who has so much happiness. That isn't what it is. We love that person because they make me feel happy. I become happy. In the presence of that person, I become happy. And then I love that person because they make me happy. They become very dear to me. Until they don't make me happy anymore. And then I think, you used to be so close to me, you used to make me so happy, you know. What happened? Now you make me so unhappy. Why did I marry you? Oh, you know. So what I'm in love with, the point is, what I'm in love with is not the person or not the situation. I'm in love with happiness. And if that person becomes a means to that happiness, I love that person because they make me happy. But what I'm really in love with is the ananda itself. I'm in love with my existence. I'm in love with the conscious being that I am. And I'm in love with the fullness that I am, but only seem to temporarily experience. The reason I only temporarily experience it is because since it's projected onto another person by my mind or another situation, my mind relaxes and becomes a shanta vritti, the most peaceful vritti, when whoever is carrying the projection is being what I want them to be. Then I'm given the beautiful shanta vritti, and in that shanta vritti, there's no obstruction. And that my nature, my own nature, reflects off of that shanta vritti in the way that the mind itself has a temporary experience of happiness. Right? That's not good enough, though, because it's only temporary. So what we need to learn is that where does that experience of happiness come from? It can't come from the person. If it came from that person, then every time that person walked in the room, everyone would become happiness. Because the happiness is walking into the room, you know? And then, also, that person, whenever you saw them, you would become happy. But that isn't how it is. You see them, sometimes they make you happy, sometimes they don't. And sometimes when they're not making you happy, they're making somebody else happy. Somebody walks in the room and you see some people are really smiling and so happy to see that person, and other people are like this. And then that can change into its opposite. Somehow the happy person got their feelings hurt and becomes, you know, really angry. And the person who is really angry and irritated, all of a sudden something happens and they become very happy. And so this is like it's kind of like juggling. And what it really is that they're not the carrier of happiness at all. It's just because you project it on them or on a situation or on an animal or on anything you can imagine, you know, anything you can imagine, then when that thing, whatever it is behaving properly, you have a shanta vritti. When you have a shanta vritti, then like a clear water bucket reflecting the sun, right, it's like the sun reflection explodes in the water. And the wholeness of your being fills the shanta vritti. And now all is well with me. It is so beautiful. You know? Fine. It's just that vrittis are ever changing. Ever changing. You can't make them stop. You can't say, okay, that's it. Stop, stop. 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 No, it won't. It won't stop. And so the shanta, the ananda drips off. That's going to be very, very shocking to watch. Say you're totally in love with a person. Some months have gone by in the bliss bubble. When we're younger, we experience. We tend not to experience that so much when we're older. the bliss bubble has dropped off, and all of a sudden there's just this person standing there. It's horrifying. You feel guilty also. Because you're so in love and all of this is happening. And now you see a person, just a person, stripped of any ananda. And then that's when the relationship really starts. You have to see then whether you're having a relationship or not. Once that illusion has dropped off, then you see if you're compatible, you know, and that you have something to work with there and find a more real source of love and relationship and all of that. Yeah. But for Jnani, it's much different as you gain knowledge, because you discover that your being, the conscious being that you are, is the ananda. There is no other ananda. You can't take a reflection of ananda to be the ananda, and as the reflection, like a shanta vritti. That doesn't cut it, because as soon as the vritti goes into any type of agitation, that ananda's gone. We need to recognize the ananda, the being, the consciousness, the fullness that is always there, never not there at any time. That's why ananda is not some big bliss, like a Swamiji's, it's not a big party. Yeah. Ananda is not a big party. It's very subtle and beautiful, very normal and natural, very whole and complete. It's fullness, it's love, but not with any bells and whistles. It's natural. It's a love and wholeness and fullness that you are, no matter what the vritti. The thought modification is not harming or changing that in any way. Just like if I take the mirror and distort it like crazy, put some paint on it, or, you know, put some ash on it or something, the reflection is looking a little odd, you know, but my self-experience has not changed at all. The me is not in the vritti. Doesn't belong to the vritti. It belongs to the self of the vritti, right? And that never changes. And so our task, really, is satya mitya, is to be able to, the viveka, to be able to come, the mind, to come into relationship with me, the one who is changeless, instead of being identified with it. And then there's no problem. Whatever the thought, whatever is going on, it doesn't matter, because it's not touching me. It's not changing me. It's not touching me. And when that is the case, we'll see this more tomorrow, but when that is the case, since it doesn't touch me, it doesn't change me, I am a Sangha, and it also doesn't belong to me. How can it belong to me? It doesn't touch me, it doesn't change me, it doesn't have any effect on me, or me the Atma. So who does it belong to then? It belongs to Ishwara. Even from Ishwara's standpoint, Ishwara's self is not affected by Ishwara's upadhi. Ishwara can say the same thing. This is my upadhi, but it doesn't touch me. It doesn't change me. It doesn't do anything to me. You know? It's mitya. It's just mitya. It's a beautiful mitya, incredible, infinitely intelligent mitya. But the maya is mitya. But it doesn't touch me in any way. I am its being, I am itself, but it doesn't touch me in any way. And that's the knowledge we have to have, is the direct, immediate recognition, so that when I'm sitting here, I am here, the face, not the mirror, I am here. And then in me, the stable being that I am, all of this is taking place. So the mirror gets to be the mirror, and I get to be me. And it's very beautiful. So,
swasti prajabhyah paripalayantam nyayena margena mahimahishah go brahmanebhyah shubhamastu nityam loka samasta sukhino bhavantu kale varshatu parjanyah prithivi sasya shalini desho yam shobarahitah brahmana santu nirbhayah om sarvesham swastir bhavatu sarvesham shantir bhavatu sarvesham purnam bhavatu sarvesham mangalam bhavatu sarve bhavantu sukhinah sarve santu niramayah sarve bhadrani pashyantu ma kaschit dukhabhag bhavet asato ma satgamaya tamaso ma jyotirgamaya mrityorma amritangamaya om purnamadah purnamidam purnat purnamudachyate purnasya purnamadaya purnameva vashishyate om shanti shanti shantihi Harih Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harih Om